Welcome to TalentWise, the definitive podcast for CXOs, human resource and learning and development leaders. This show comes to you from thought leaders who talk about human capital development in today's organization. How to engage and empower today's employee to be effective, competitive and relevant. Stay with us for an exciting conversation with our guest and learn how to future-proof your team. I'm your host Shubhanjan, founder of KnowledgeBridge. Our guest today is Kalyan Banerjee, focused on exploring the future of education.
Out there in tandem, there was a Wipro team of more than 20 people who were fixing bugs on Tandem's fault-tolerant Unix. And the job of the bug leader was simple, that he had to assign bugs. Every day bugs will come in, or every week bugs will come in, and he has to assign bugs to the appropriate person. Now, in conventional thinking, you would assign the toughest bugs to the smartest people. And that's what he did. And the simplest bugs probably to the rookies. And every team has its normal distribution, and that's how you distribute the bugs among the people. Now, there was one interesting person in Tandem called Mario Pagliaro, who was doing research in software engineering, and his interest area was productivity of teams, and that's pretty relevant to our discussion here. And what he experimented with was, can we give the toughest problems not to the smartest people, but to the next level of smart people? And can we give the average problems to the smartest people?
Kalyan began his career in Wipro R&D, where he actively participated in their metamorphosis into a global design services organization. Later, Kalyan was among the 10 co-founders at Mindtree, respected for its leadership in learning and culture. While at Mindtree, Kalyan focused on organization learning and conceived the knowledge management, culture and competence, and leadership development initiatives. Kalyan is now associated with young organizations like Chlorophyll Foundation, Reap Benefit, and Walnut, experimenting with teaching learning methods that are fun, affordable, and effective. Kalyan believes there is no silver bullet in education, and we need a variety of learning tools that work in diverse contexts. Now, on to this great episode of TalentWise with Kalyan Banerjee.
Hello, Kalyan. Welcome to TalentWise. I'm really excited to have you here. You know that I have great respect for what you have done, and I believe that you are one of the deep and original thinkers in this space. You have spent enormous amount of time looking at how people need to be nurtured. And you have done it with empathy and not because it is a profit motive, as in many cases with organizations it happens. Thank you for making time, and welcome to the episode.
Yeah, thank you, Shubhanjan. It's a very relevant topic, and I'm so happy that we are discussing this. It's important to discuss as well, because nobody really knows the answers. Before we begin, I would also want to touch upon the profit motive and empathy part of it. I believe that if you have a profit motive, you are thinking of the next quarter and at most the next year. But when you have empathy and you bring people into your cause, probably you are thinking 10, 20 years ahead. So in that sense, your mention of empathy is interesting, because that may be one of the ways to build the future. And that's the reason maybe we need to discuss. My first reaction to future-proofing is that nothing can be future-proofed, in the sense that we know that human beings die no matter who they are, or even in their lifetime they come down. We know that companies close down, the greatest of them. We know that nations die. So in a sense, you know, future proofing as a concept, it may not be forever. But if we define future in chunks of 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, maybe yes, future proofing is possible. The other point I would like to make is that future proofing of individuals may be more difficult than future proofing of teams. And the topic is future proofing of teams, because when we talk about teams, it is possible that in a smoothly running team, it is not vulnerable to just one link. So there could be several links in it that may not function at a specific time, and yet the team could progress. So that's again an interesting point to me, which I think we should dwell on.
Sure. So I understand you're distinguishing between future-proofing an individual employee as and his ability to contribute both to himself and wherever he is working. It's not necessary the same person will be working in the same place. In fact, what we are seeing, if you, I don't know whether you agree with it or not, that unlike our generation or even the previous generation, we would stick to one kind of work, not necessarily one company, but one kind of work. For example, if I'm a software developer, I'll remain a software developer. But in the next generation, they're changing the entire career. They're moving away from software and going into teaching. They're moving away from teaching and going into something else. That's becoming more predominant. Coming back, the point that I hear you say is that if it is a team, the dynamics of multiple people and thereby some overlapping capability of managing some shortfalls is easier to tackle than actually getting all the people aligned and all the people future-proofed. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, precisely. When we get to teams, it's also about capacity building. Hmm. So, while the team's job is to fight the battles of today, it is also to prepare for the future. Hmm. Now, good teams and far-sighted teams will do that extremely well. Hmm. Now, I want to take some personal examples.
Right.
And I think I was extremely fortunate to be working in a great team, which was Wipro's R&D and later called Global R&D in the 80s and 90s. Hmm. And we had some great leaders, significantly Dr. Sridhar Mitta, Jani, later Subroto Bagchi, who actually built these teams and built leaders within the teams. Built leaders within their team who have taken it forward. And the sign of their greatness really came in after 1999 when all of them left and Wipro continued to do well. I think that's the sign of great leadership and great future-proof leaders, because they build teams that survive them. So I think that's one aspect that we need to think. Rather than star leaders on whom the team is dependent, and when they move on or they fail, the entire team fails. And I think we have seen both kind of leaders everywhere in business, in politics, in sports.
Hmm. So one interesting hypothesis comes out is that if you want to future-proof your team, it's better to avoid star leaders.
No, I don't suggest that, because probably there are star leaders and they could future-proof their teams too.
Sure.
Microsoft continues to do well beyond Bill Gates,
That's
who
true.
Of course was the biggest of the star leaders we have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, there are other examples. Maybe Apple is not doing as well, but it continues in its high position.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that. And again, Dhoni was a star leader, I suppose, and so was Sourav Ganguly, to take some sports examples. So yes, you could be a star leader and you could be a team builder at the same time.
So tell me, from your reference to Wipro Global R&D and later at Mindtree, what kind of thoughts did you see at the senior level, at your level, about this agility that needs to be built into the employees, and what kind of traits or habits were you focusing on?
Yeah. Prior to that, I just wanted to share a story on the productivity of teams, something that was not played within Wipro or Mindtree, but at an organization called Tandem in the 90s, where I happened to work for a while in an assignment from Wipro. Out there in Tandem, there was a Wipro team of more than 20 people who were fixing bugs on Tandem's fault-tolerant Unix. And the job of the bug leader was simple, that he had to assign bugs. Every day bugs will come in, or every week bugs will come in, and he has to assign bugs to the appropriate person. Now, in conventional thinking, you would assign the toughest bugs to the smartest people. And that's what he did. And the simplest bugs probably to the rookies. And every team has its normal distribution. And that's how you distribute the bugs among the people. Now, there was one interesting person in Tandem called Mario Pagliaro, who was doing research in software engineering, and his interest area was productivity of teams, and that's pretty relevant to our discussion here. And what he experimented with was, can we give the toughest problems not to the smartest people, but to the next level of smart people? And can we give the average problems to the smartest people? And then we check how the productivity happens in the team. Does it remain the same, becomes better, worse? And interestingly, what happened was, in that team, the second level of smartest people, they could tackle the problems. They could tackle the toughest problems, and hence they grew. So this became a very good exercise in capacity building. On the other hand, the smartest people, they were tackling only average problems, so they had plenty of free time. Now, in the past, when they were tackling the toughest problems, they had very little free time. They were preoccupied with their own challenges, and they had very little time to spare for other people in the team. But now they had plenty of time to spare. And including the second best people who were tackling the toughest problems, and everybody else in the team. And hence, everybody benefited from this. And the team productivity increased. I'm not sure if other people have done this experiment, and in whatever context, or so explicitly in measuring. Now, here, productivity was easy to measure, because you just need to find the bugs per week, or bugs solved per week. So this really gives us an insight, into how we could increase capacity of the team. The first thing is, yes, the stars, they tackle the toughest problems, but if the stars take a back seat, probably back seat not in the sense of relaxing, but in supporting others, then probably the team as a whole benefits. And understand one thing, that in the second model, if any member of the team leaves, it should not happen. But when that happens, the team is not vulnerable to one or two members leaving. But a team that depends on stars, it is very much vulnerable to the stars, who become critical to the existence of the team.
It's such a wonderful story, and I can imagine how many different ways, even in non-software areas, this can be very well applied. I mean, you look at another very generic yet complex field of sales. Typically, if you see that the second brightest sales guys are given the most challenging accounts to crack and apply the same idea, then these great smart sales guys are available to the entire team to actually mentor and help them through. What a wonderful story. Moving on, I just wanted to know, do you have any thoughts about what kind of traits do the new gen, not only the new gen, everybody who is in the employment pool today, need to focus upon to stay relevant and stay current? Because obviously the cascading nature of knowledge has become extremely rapid over the last, say, 15, 20 years, right? It's unlike what was happening earlier. And we all need to cope, and we hear all the time about the difficulty in coping, etc. So would you say that there are some habits that one needs to cultivate? For example, Cal Newport wrote this book about deep work. Your thoughts?
Yeah, actually, I could share again what I have read and what I have experienced again from maybe different authors or experts in the area. But prior to that, I was recalling a story from a few years back when I was in a panel discussion in a management school. And again, the topic was something related to knowledge and future and so on, something related to whatever we are talking today. And I was sitting next to the promoter of that college and the chairman of that college. He made a radical statement that by the time you graduate out of this course, your anything that you are studying now will be obsolete. Now, it looked like a very radical statement to make, and it got the crowd's attention. But then I responded that in that case, sir, why are you running this course? You know, why don't we close down the college? What use is this degree? So my view was to provoke him, and because he provoked, you know, provoke him into a discussion, but he got defensive and the point stopped there. The issue here is it's not that simply because knowledge becomes obsolete, it doesn't mean that we don't pursue knowledge. We need to pursue, but we need to be careful about what kind of knowledge and the nature of knowledge. In the past, we did not have to focus too much on this because knowledge did not become obsolete so soon, and often it lasted a lifetime, and hence it didn't matter. Eventually, all knowledge gets obsolete. The 19th century physics maybe not at the cutting edge now, and so the physicist has to continue to study and work hard. But the speed of knowledge obsolescence, you know, that has increased, and that's the area of concern. Now, at Mindtree, we did a leadership capacity building program for the top 200 leaders, and that was around 2010. And at that time, we learned that what's important for the future is learning agility. That made a lot of sense to us, because over the last 20 years or the previous 20 years in my career, I heard everybody talking of potential, and we value people with potential. But I never knew, and nobody answered this question, how do you measure potential? I found that everybody measures potential by past performance. In that sense, you know, it is potential is almost equal to performance. But somehow I was not convinced with that answer. Now, when this concept of learning agility came in, now the proponents of learning agility said that potential means learning agility. So, and then somehow that made sense to me. The key word here is not learning, but agility. Now, how agile I am, and if I am agile, of course, I can take on to new knowledge, new trends, and I can take care of the future. Now, how does one build learning agility? It's broken into four components: mental agility, people agility, change agility, and results agility. Now, let me explain. Mental agility is not mental ability or mental aptitude. It is not the capability to solve the Rubik's Cube or Sudoku. It is the exposure to diverse knowledge. Are you reading a variety of books? Looking at a variety of videos? Are you doing a variety of tasks? Are your friends only people in your profession, or they include doctors, lawyers, software engineers, policemen, and so on? So when you do these, you are exposed to diverse perspectives, and that makes you mentally agile. Next is people agility. Again, people agility is not about empathy and being nice to people or being a good team worker or a team leader. People agility is the ability to work with a variety of people, with diverse people. To understand the unspoken signals of given by different people from different cultures and different professions. Now, a lot of people are extremely good and harmonizing professionals in one environment, but they cannot work in another environment. Now, they are not people agile, even though maybe they themselves may be wonderful people. The next is results agility. I think this we understand the best. And usually they are the ones who are valued most in an organization or in teams. Come what may, they will give you the results. Now, somebody else, a lesser performer, will be bogged down by obstacles and will give you good reasons, very good reasons, why they could not show results. But somebody who is results agile will find his or her way around the problems and then give you results come what may. Of course, every organization today values them and they are the ones who keep rising. The fourth one is change agility. We have seen in organizations that people who perform the best, now when a new role comes, a new task comes, biggest challenge emerges, the best performers are given those jobs. Now, we see that very often that's a good decision and the performers keep rising to the challenge. On the other hand, some people are not able to rise to the challenge. They will not be able to perform in the new role assigned to them. So that time, very often we conclude that they have plateaued. It's not necessary that they have plateaued. It's just that they are not change agile. Those with change agility will be able to work in a variety of technologies, different geographies, with a variety of people in different domains. But those with lower change agility may not be able to come out of their specialization domains, technologies, or geographies. So these are the four agilities if we cultivate. So an organization that wants its teams or leaders to be future proof would want its people to cultivate these four agilities.
Oh, that's a fantastic reference. I think that sort of covers a lot of ground, actually. Let's take a short break.
You are listening to a Show How To audio original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences.
Welcome back. Would you like to, I know you spoke about interdisciplinary knowledge while you spoke about this, but would you like to expand any more on any of these ideas of, interdisciplinary knowledge or how competence needs to be redefined? You did touch upon that. Would you want to expand upon that at all?
Yeah, sure. I think future is interdisciplinary. If we look at some of the biggest problems that the planet is facing, clean water, clean air, clean energy, and so on, not to speak of jobs and livelihoods or even clean food and agriculture. The problems are actually interdisciplinary and solutions need to be interdisciplinary. We are not able to make progress probably because one thing, of course, is we are not looking beyond our narrow interests and beyond our interests of the next few years. But it is also because we are not being able to see the whole problem. And when we don't see the whole problem, we get frustrated. That is human nature. And now, for academic convenience, we have divided our academic programs into different subjects. And even within engineering, we have divided into multiple different kinds of engineering. Now, but that is not how nature works. I just recall another work by another great man, Howard Gardner. Now, Howard Gardner is the author of the concept of multiple intelligences. And among his many books, one book is titled Five Minds for the Future. And there he lists five competencies which are necessary to be successful in the future. I think this book was written in the last decade, and when he talked of future, it meant this decade, which is now coming to an end. Maybe we can just extend that to the next decade as well. Hmm. Now, what are these five minds? The first one is the disciplined mind. Now, by discipline, he doesn't mean that punctuality or dressing well, which is one meaning of discipline. By discipline, he means expertise, or say in the sense that electrical engineering is a discipline, or medicine is a discipline. So he says that you have to be extremely good in one area. Many people have said this, and when we discuss many other attributes of future proofing, somehow very often we forget the foundations. You know, the foundation is expertise. You need to be extremely good in some area. And he said that it takes at least 10 years to be an expert. Now, that's a lesson for, you touched upon the millennials. Yeah. So that's a lesson actually for the millennials, if they would care to listen, that you don't become an expert in 2 years or 4 years, because usually they tire of a discipline pretty soon. Mm. So it takes at least 10 years to be an expert. And this he is talking of with a lot of research, and research across multiple disciplines. Now, a similar number actually has come from Malcolm Gladwell on the 10,000 hour rule.
Right.
Where Malcolm Gladwell says that you have to practice. It's not enough being around for 10 years. You know, right. You have to actually practice for 10,000 years. And he gives examples across disciplines again of how any expert, before somebody got called an expert, has put in the 10,000 hours of practice.
Correct.
Just what immediately comes to mind, for example, is, which is a very, very Indian example, Sachin Tendulkar. He reached that God position, or that revered position, after that series in Sharjah. And when he looked like unbeatable. And that was around, I think, late 90s, and he was playing for 10 years.
Right.
If we add up the practice hours, maybe in some way it will come to 10,000. But we also know that the best experts, they put in very, very hard work. So we cannot deny the importance of hard work in building expertise or future proofing or whatever else we may call that.
Right.
So that's the first mind.
Hmm.
The second mind is the synthesizing mind. Now, and that's a very interesting point, and not talked about as much as the other four minds. We are getting multiple patterns and signals all the time.
Hmm.
Now, can we sift the signal from the noise? Hmm. And can we construct our own narratives and stories? If we are able to do that, then we get an insight into the future, into what is really happening. And that capability is the synthesizing mind.
Right.
One good example of a synthesizing mind is Sherlock Holmes.
Hmm.
Now, he sees a bits of paper, some paper that he concludes is some cigarette, or he looks at the strides or the boot marks on the mud, or he thinks of the dog that did not bark, and then he constructs a story.
Hmm.
So that capability to construct that story from these apparently unconnected bits of information, you know, that's a synthesizing mind. In my mind, the periodic table is one of the greatest examples of the synthesizing mind. You know, prior to the periodic table, all these elements, they looked very different with all very different characteristics. But this great man, the synthesizing mind, he comes and he makes it into one table. And then you can interpret the table. And that's an example again of the synthesizing mind. Unfortunately, synthesis is not so much taught in our schools or colleges. You know, we focus on analysis. Analysis is the opposite of synthesis. You have a complex problem, and how can you break it down into simple problems and then tackle the simple problems? And then the complex problem also gets tackled. So most of our education, school education or higher education or highest education is focused on analysis. We don't do synthesis. The third mind is called the creative mind. Now, we understand what is creation and what is creativity, so I will not dwell on this. So, one needs to be creative. The last two are interesting. The fourth one is the respectful mind. Now, respect doesn't mean in the sense of I come and I touch your feet. But do I respect other people's opinions, other people's perspectives? And am I being open to other people's views? Or am I just dismissing them? Am I thinking that only I am right? Now, we are in a world where problems are complex. No one person has the capability to understand the problems, and we need to have that humility to understand that I don't know all. Now, then from that humility needs to come that openness that, okay, maybe other people will have an answer. Now, if somebody is telling something atrocious or something, you know, my intellect immediately rejects. Now, yes, it's fine to reject based on rationale. However, if I am respectful, I will also wonder, why did this person say this? Why is he or she talking like this? Now, let me delve more into that. Maybe she also is somewhat intelligent. Now, let me understand her point of view. And that may give me a different perspective.
So, that sort of links back to that learning agility and having exposure to diverse group of people.
You will notice that these are actually related, you know.
Yes.
The synthesis also has to do with mental agility and people agility.
Yes.
For example.
Yes.
So this is very important. And if I am not a respectful mind, you know, my learning agility is low, and at some stage maybe I'll be learning stunted, you know, and I will depend on the wisdom of the past. Last one is the ethical mind. And that's interesting because today a whole lot of people believe that ethics and success don't go together. But here is somebody with a Harvard background and you know, very respected with his research, and he is talking of the ethical mind being critical to success in the future. And he has his views. Now, I'll put it in my way, not what he might have meant. See, when you go and buy a Apple, a Samsung, or a Toyota product, now you depend on the product and its reputation, and based on that you go and buy it. And often, you know, you can do a test drive for any of these, okay, and you convince yourself that yes, this is a good product that I am buying, and so you can do. And beyond the point, maybe whether Toyota or Apple is ethical or not did not matter so much to you. On the other hand, the world is moving more towards knowledge and services. A whole lot of business will be done in that sense. And when you make the decision to buy, you will not be aware of what kind of service you would exactly get. You know, you have committed yourself first, then the service is given.
Hmm.
And only later, only after the service is completed or much after the service is completed, would you know whether you got the right product or appropriate product or not.
Hmm. Hmm.
So what happens in that situation? You know, it's a question of, you know, you get a plumber who comes to your house. Now, how do you select the plumber? You don't select based on degrees.
Hmm.
So degrees is the hard way to select, you know, but that's not the way you select. You select based on reference. You select based on past performance. And in the knowledge and services industry, now that's how it happens. So if somebody is not ethical, you know, he or she may succeed for a while, but eventually, reputation will catch up with him or her. So I think this is a very, very important. The fifth one is the most important because, you won't see the results immediately. But the reputation you have built over 20 years, maybe that's when it will show in your career. Now, that's an interesting point also, by Clayton Christensen of Harvard Business School. That he said that Harvard graduates, by the time they are in their 30s, not much difference is seen. You know, somebody is a little faster, somebody is a little slower. But by the time they are in their 40s, now you see that there are huge differences, huge skews in their career. Somebody is remarkably ahead, very, very highly reputed or has made a lot of money. And there are other people who have just got behind. And it is the investment in ethics, in people, in relationship that people have made over 20 years that start showing results then. So I think in that sense, this becomes extremely important because we can keep neglecting it and not knowing the result. It's like something like health and exercise.
Right.
You know, in young days, you will not see the results, or you will not see the difference in results. But on the other hand, you know, as you grow older, you will see the results, but by then it's too late to change.
True.
TalentWise is brought to you by KnowledgeBridge. We produce customized and multilingual visual training content. We have worked on complex processes, products, and skills development for large blue chip brands such as Tata Motors, Mahindra First Choice, Homelane, Epson, Toyota, Citibank, and Consul Neowatt, serving diverse industries. Talk to us for your next custom content requirement and be pleasantly surprised. Call us on 9902163132.
I think there are a lot of takeaways from this chat, and I think the listeners who listen to this will get at least some points to start with, whether it's learning agility or Howard Gardner's five minds of the future. I think these reference points are what we need sort of to use to reflect and use as a lens to examine what we are thinking. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and sharing. And I'm quite certain that I'll be coming back to you soon for another chat. Thank you, Kalyan.
Thank you for being with us today on TalentWise. We hope we helped you focus on some actionable ideas today. It was certainly enlightening for us. We hope to see you again on our next episode. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and give us a rating while you're at it. Thank you in advance. This Show How To Original podcast is produced for KnowledgeBridge, the multilingual visual training platform and custom training content creators by Show How To Audio. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time.